not caring for as you were walking? Did anything, any different experience? Yes?
Well, when we started out, I was the leader, but I kept trying to keep up with my followers.
Oh, I see.
Kind of get out of the mindful loop.
And I'm like, wait,
slow down.
So I had to kind of nudge her and say, you know, watch my feet.
So you learn something. You learn something. Yeah.
Well, for me, too, it reminds me, I've taken my mother, who's 85, you know, for dinner, we'll go do things, and after leaving, I pace pretty fast. I'm long-legged fast walker. And to really just creep down to that snail's pace, and it reminded me of that in our times with them. I mean, almost so I could fall over, I'm taking steps so slowly.
Yes.
With my mom, you know, that it's like, so I have to really do it.
Yeah, and I think it's helpful if you start viewing it as a mindfulness practice. Mm-hmm. It's no longer, oh gosh, I gotta slow down and I love to walk so fast and now I have to walk so slow. But you just you say, okay, this is just like my walking meditation. But so it changes the whole experience if you do that.
I was I volunteer with Catholic Charities and they had me placed with a woman with dementia. And I would take her out. And that was exactly my experience. She was so slow. I mean, I'm slow. She was even slower. And I had to just say, okay, you know, not in a hurry, just, you know. But I could see where it would be very frustrating for people that have things to do and they have a loved one with them that seems to be holding them back.
Yes.
That would be frustrating.
Anything else? Anybody?
It was fun. It was delightful.
You two were doing some funny stuff. I still got dancing or...
Well, I was just thinking of the different things that people I've seen with Alzheimer's and the fast, slow, the
yes.
erraticness and the destructibility and all of that. So I was trying to bring that in and experience that myself. That was...
So how was it when you experienced that?
I don't think it would have been so enjoyable if it weren't that there was someone there to acknowledge what I was going through. And then it became fun.
Mm-hmm.
But that was a big part of it. I really appreciated the acknowledgement. And yes, I, you know, this little speck on the ground is interesting to me and that someone is acknowledging it.
Yes, she was really joining you
in
your pace and your reality. And,
and it was actually quite delightful for me. You know, it became playful because it was like, well, she's seeing something really interesting or this is fascinating or this is something of interest. And so it was like, well, let me look at it through her eyes. And it was just sweet. Whereas if I had an agenda, we have to go somewhere, or it needs to be this straight line, or it needs to be, you know, following a particular routine, it would have been really frustrating.
Right, because it clashes.
Right. But to follow along and then to just pick up, I mean, we do a lot of things, I've done a lot of things with mindfulness in terms of body, posture and everything. And when I started to actually mimic what Callie was doing, I could pick up or perceive here is some playfulness, here is some tentativeness, or some sense of, oh, you know, you could sense changes of mood just because your body was doing the same thing.
Yes.
And it was just delightful.
Anything else came up? Anybody? Yeah?
Well, I've had to experience what it's like for me to, I was walking at a slow pace when it was my time to, I guess, leave. And my partner was walking the way she normally walks, which is the faster pace. And I would stop and I was mimicking what my partner does without her knowing it. And I get really frustrated, and there's a little bit of frustration between me and perhaps. She just didn't know, you know, why I was stopping. and just kind of looking around. And just being in the moment where she just wanted to keep walking at her pace. So I feel that when I'm walking with my partner, I really need to pace myself rather than be down the street waiting for her to come.
Yes. You know, it's really a radical shift in how we are with a person. Mm-hmm. And it's discovering the relief from giving up our agenda. And it's kind of like when you follow the breath, you know, you don't have to do anything, you just follow. Same with the mindfulness of sounds, same with the steps, just being there. And in this case, it's just you just surrender to whatever it is the other person is doing. It's actually relaxing once you get into it.
Once you get rid of your own agenda.
Yeah, right.
That's where you fall. Where am I going? You know, it's just happening.
And you may surrender and then it may pop up again. So that's what mindfulness is. Oh, okay, now I'm thinking about I need to go there. Okay, I'm coming back to this person.
And it's a great opportunity to stop and take a breath.
I'm sorry?
To stop and breathe.
Yes, also.
And breath.
Yes.
And just relax into it rather than create something that doesn't need to be there.
You know, there's a gentleman I see in my private practice. He has Parkinson's, pretty far advanced. He told me the most important thing in the therapy was that I first met him. He was in his car, and I walked with him to my office, and it's about from here to here, and it took us 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. And nobody's ever done that before. And he said, this is what I want. My wife, she's always over there. She never stays. She never... And so that's a gift, is to be so attuned. And what makes it gratifying is to remember it's a practice. It's a mindfulness practice. And it's good for us too. Okay. So shifting a little bit, I wanted to talk about mindful communication. So what we've done so far today is kind of building. It's like these blocks. So first is to start from a mindful centered place. So this is what the check-in, the mini check-in we do. And then you position, you go into the relationship, the interaction with the positioning of a person as a whole person. This is the premise before you enter the space. And then you become aware of the whole environment. When we did mindfulness of sounds, that's that. You know, what do you hear? Is there too much noise, too many sounds? You need to turn off the TV. You need to modify something so that the environment is good. And same with seeing. What do you really see? Paying attention to the person. Not what you think, not what you want the person to do, but where is the person really? I once, there was in a day program, a resident, the staff wanted him to go to exercise. And he kept trying, and he would budge, and he was not verbal. Finally, I came in, and I did what they do, because it's contagious. You know, I also tried to get in, but I sat down with him. Went nowhere, and then I gave up. That's when I gave up my agenda. And I finally saw him. And what I saw is that this guy was sleeping. He kept... But I hadn't seen that, because I was intent on getting him to exercise. And when I told him, I said, you seem tired. He reached out for my hand, and he squeezed it. And then when I said, would you like to go rest, he stood up and went to rest. We found out he had not slept all night with his family. Mm-hmm. So this is the kind of stuff. You know, it's just giving up our agenda of what we need and just really seeing what's there, hearing what is there, using our senses. Also the temperature. You know, oftentimes people who are in dependent situation or sitting for long times in wheelchairs and stuff, and they don't experience the ambient temperature the way we do. They get cold much faster. So pay attention. Maybe they go like this, and that's a signal that they're cold. Meaning the person at her level, always at or below eye level. So if someone is sitting, is asking, may I sit with you? And sitting with that, same when they're lying down, of course. If they're standing, we need them standing. So that And then the pacing, which we just practiced, following their pace. That may be physically walking, or that may be in their language. So pausing, waiting for them to see something, waiting for a response. Respecting the personal space, not too close. Oftentimes people get upset if you get too close. So you have to be careful about the touch, the whole mindful touch, you know, that we learn at hospice is also very important. To realize that our own relationship to touch may not be the same as the person we're caring for, particularly if it's not a family member and we're not familiar with what, you know, they're not used to us. So we have to be aware of that. My mom, who used to be really loved to hug and stuff, last 3 months of her life, she clearly was withdrawing. And when I tried to reach out to her, she would go like this. So this is an indication that she did not want me to touch her. She wanted to go like this. She was not into this, relating anymore. So it's just looking at that, taking that information and then acting on it.
It's interesting because I was studying yoga before my husband's diagnosis, and I was noticing this kind of withdrawal. You know, his most affected area was language, so he was not communicating very much to me. But I was reading a book by Thich Nhat Hanh, and he said something about sit by your loved person and reach out to them. So I thought, okay, he's usually sitting in his chair and he's watching TV or something. So I got on the chair and I thought, okay, we're gonna remedy this problem, because I had no idea what the problem. And I put the chair next to him, and I went to like touch his arm, and the first thing he did was to look back. That was one of the first signs that there was something wrong. Once his diagnosis was made, that totally went away. Now he likes me to hold his hand, and he likes me to be next to him. But at that point where he didn't know what was wrong.
Yes. So it also fluctuates. Even you may know someone, you know, or be very close to them. It may vary. So you have to read. You have to, and you ask, may I touch you? Particularly when if it's a professional relationship, we don't know that person. And if they can't speak, we just read their body language.
What's very confusing for those of us who have husbands who have something happen and it seems to be a common threat, that they behave very, their personality changes for what appears to be no reason. And then once the Alzheimer's is diagnosed, then all the things fall into place. And that's one of the things I thought about, is that he was withdrawing perhaps because he didn't know what was wrong.
Yes. Paying attention to nonverbal communication, yes. Validating the person's whole experience. So in the whole field of dementia, you know, this is validation approach. And so it's good in theory, but what the challenge is to actually validate. We may think we're validating, but really we're not. We may think we're, yes, you're angry, I know you're angry, and but really, what we really want is we want this to stop. And we can't wait to redirect, the other word that's used, redirect so we get out of this zone of discomfort to the person. But we haven't really addressed the person's distress. So it's something that we need to be very aware that when somebody behaves in a certain way, there's a reason. There's a need that's not being met, and we need to figure it out. We cannot dismiss, whatever it is, we cannot dismiss it. Because for that person, it's very real, very real. And then meeting the two emotional needs we talked about, and then remembering to stop and breathe often when we are engaged with someone. Because as we do that, we reconnect with ourselves. We bring that pause, and we maintain this equanimity. So now I'd like, do you have questions before we go into the next? Okay. So I'd like to ask you to join me in doing an exercise. And again, you're going to pair in two. And hardly go outside because it's better if you're not too close to each other. So it's going to be a role play. And for those of you who have someone with dementia that does that, it's going to be easier to do. For the others, I'm going to ask you to stretch, okay? So one of the features of dementia is that people repeat themselves. So one of the things that they often say is, when can I go home? So I'm going to ask you to take turns playing that. So one of you is just going to repeat, when can I go home? And you're going to have to respond, however way. And also, because this is mindfulness, pay attention to what comes up for you, both as a person who's repeating like this and the person who is being with that other person. So pay attention to what comes up in your thoughts, your emotions, your body. So you're going to do this for 5 minutes each, and I will time it so you don't have to worry about how long. But so please go. Do you have questions? Is that clear?
Do you have any advice for the person who's not demented or how to handle that? Because I've been in that situation many times, and I'd love to practice something, you know, in terms of like how to respond.
Well, do the role play right now.
Okay.
See what happens.
All right.
Okay.